Welcome to the SB Live California podcast. I'm your host, Connor Morissette. As always, with Lance Smith and Bodie Da Silva. Want to wrap up the football season, talk about some of the best unsigned seniors who we saw this spring. But before we get going, I want to take a moment to tell you about something exciting for high school sports fans across the country. SB Live Sports has launched a free iPhone and Android app featuring the latest California high school sports news, scores, videos, polls, photos, podcasts, player rankings, and much more. With the SB Live Sports app, it is now even easier to follow your favorite team with real-time scores and news alerts, as well as video highlights, podcasts, photo galleries, rankings, game coverage, and much more. The app delivers all the content you want in one convenient place. The SB Live Sports app features exclusive content from on-the-ground reporters across the country, and it's your number one source for California high school sports fans with coverage from reporters Lance Smith, Bodie Da Silva, and myself. The SB Live Sports app is available at no charge in the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. Download it today. All right, Bodie, Lance, football in the Southern section and in the San Diego section is over. We're on to basketball, baseball, and all the other season two sports. Got a lot on the table today. How you guys doing?
Good. I'm glad to be here. Bum football is officially over, but like you said, that means it's time for a lot of other things, although not before we do one more football podcast.
Yeah, so the big game Saturday in the Southern section, Lance, was St. John Bosco, Mater Dei. Mater Dei won 34-17. A few days have gone by. We're recording this on Wednesday. The game was Saturday. A few things that I thought was interesting outside of what was written about after the game, just as I've had some time to think about it. I thought for the most part, those two teams were evenly matched, even though the scoreboard didn't necessarily show it. I know Elijah Brown had that great game, and he outplayed the two St. John Bosco quarterbacks, I thought. And then I thought the real difference in the game was that the modern day receivers, mainly C.J. Williams and Kyron Ware-Hudson, and I know Josiah Zamora had a great game too, so I want to include him. They were the difference. I thought on the St. John Bosco side, they couldn't match up with that big play ability that Mater Dei had, and I ultimately thought that's what won Mater Dei the game. And then, of course, Elijah Brown was able to get those guys the ball. But looking at what St. John Bosco tried to do on offense, I thought they relied too much on Rayshon Luke in the passing game, in the sense that they thought he was going to be their home run threat, when in reality, maybe they would have been better off trying to get some of the wide receivers more involved, because I thought those speedy modern day linebackers did a good enough job on Luke in the passing game. I thought where the game was won was that modern day was able to make chunk plays with their receivers, and those guys were game breakers, and they won them the game. Brown was able to get them the ball. That's what won modern day the game, and I thought St. John Bosco couldn't match that big play ability. Some of the thoughts I've had, what have you been thinking since that game ended?
Oh, same thing. I was surprised it got as lopsided as it did at the end. Not that 17 points is lopsided, but, I mean, we saw both of those teams play Servite, for instance. Both of those games were pretty dang close. One thing you predicted before that game, I think last week, was it's going to come down to whichever quarterback makes the fewest mistakes. And I said, yeah, that's probably true. And, of course, Elijah Brown, kind of a disadvantage because he's a freshman. And you're like, you said, well, he has more varsity snaps than either of St. John Bosco's quarterbacks. That could be a factor. You were totally right. He looked a little bit more poised and locked in. Not more locked in as in focus, but he just seemed more grounded, more like he had a sense of grabbing the bull by the horns. And you're right, C.J. Williams especially was able to make plays. Brown had to make some great throws to deliver. But the amount that the modern-day wide receivers were able to create separation in single coverage or in man-to-man coverage was absolutely one of the big factors. One guy on St. John Bosco who really impressed me was Jairus Sautele. He did a good job destroying the pocket a few times, getting up in Elijah's grill or Brown's grill. There were a few times where I thought, okay, this is the part of the game where St. John Bosco's front seven and really their defensive line is going to start wreaking enough havoc to change the face of the game. That's not what happened at all. Every time that modern day's O-line would have a little bit of a letdown for a drive or even just a couple snaps, they would bounce back very quickly. So I agree with your assessment of the game. And it's also just Like, we've talked about how St. John Bosco has a great secondary, certainly one of the best secondaries in the state. But, man, Mater Dei's secondary every year is pretty much the best in the country. And Shoes Brinkley stepped up a ton this year. He's been both Mater Dei's leader in tackles, and I think he's tied for the most interceptions on the team. And just another guy who emerged to go along with Damani Jackson and everyone they already have. So that kind of compounded the things you were talking about in terms of St. John Bosco's receivers not quite making plays per se, in terms of getting themselves open for that deep play or for that big home run play.
Definitely. And thank you for giving me credit. But remember, I did pick St. John Bosco, and I talked a lot about their defensive line, and not a lot of that stuff didn't necessarily come true. But Satele did have a good game, you're right. And Shoes Brinkley, I don't think I've given him enough credit this season. You've mentioned him a bit, and you're right. He's had a great year. So and he was huge. I saw Greg Biggins wrote about how Brinkley had that great game and how he's an unsigned senior. So I'm sure we'll talk about him in a little bit when we talk about some of those unsigned seniors. But yeah, he's been really, really good. And that was a fun game. And maybe if Quincy Craig doesn't punch out that Kaitenhauser fumble in the beginning of the fourth quarter, Mater Dei scores, then it's a 10-point game. It's a different ball game, and we're talking about how it was a classic or something like that. So it was 17 points. And Mater Dei, I think the better team won. But still a lot to talk about, as there always is after those games. So I definitely enjoy watching that, and it was nice to be there. That's a really fun one every year.
Bodie, definitely.
Yeah, Bodie, do you want to put a bow on the San Diego football season? I know we've talked all about Cathedral Catholic, so we don't have to talk about them too much, but Carlsbad was a team that surprised you, right?
Yeah, the big thing that stuck out with Carlsbad this year, the last time I'd seen them, obviously before this, was they played in the Open Division Championship against Helix last year. They ended up falling to a really good Helix team. And I thought with all the losses that Carlsbad would take a couple steps back. They were a team that I debated even including in my preseason top 10. I forget if I had them at 9 or 10. But throughout the year, the guys that they had coming back were really strong. And I'm always big on teams that have a good returning quarterback, and that's what they have in Aiden Sayin, who will be headed to Penn next year. But he came out this year and 13 touchdowns, no interceptions, was really impressive. And the bonus for them is his younger brother, Julian, was his backup. He's a freshman, and he's already got offers from places across the country. So they're definitely in good hands for the next few years. And it wasn't just all seniors making plays. When Paulo Barak, Matthew Moore, guys like that I saw in the two games. And they were able to end the season against a good Granite Hills team. And they went up 27-0. They ended up winning 63-14. And they really made a statement there at the end to say, we may not be number one, because I think it's pretty clear that that's where Cathedral is. But they made a statement to show, hey, we're the number two team here in San Diego. And when the next season starts in a couple months, they should be a team that should be right back up there.
That'll be exciting. Do you think they could challenge Cathedral Catholic, or is that a different level?
It would definitely be interesting. It's not that Cathedral's not losing any guys. Their junior class is, I think, the strong point for them. So with guys returning at quarterback and running back with Lucky Sutton, Rex Haynes at receiver, and then a really good defensive group led by Jackson Moy, it's definitely no guarantee, but I think they would put up as good of a battle that anyone in San Diego could try and do.
Got it. Let's finish up now with some unsigned senior talk. It's April 21st, so the football deadline for Division I, you know, on a scholarship, it's long gone. So a lot of the kids we're going to talk about now will either go the junior college route, maybe try to walk on, maybe do a prep year. It would take a real stroke of luck for someone to get a scholarship this late in the game, but you know, crazier things have happened. So we'll, with all that being said, hopefully this conversation can lead to someone maybe getting recruited that otherwise wouldn't. And in this weird COVID year, you feel so bad for these seniors. They didn't get the fall season, which is a huge evaluation period. And then they didn't get the spring a year ago, which is probably the biggest evaluation period for recruiters. So feel bad for them. So the least we can do, I feel like, is talk about some of these seniors. So I don't want to put you guys on the spot if you're not necessarily prepared to answer this. So please shoot me down if I'm putting you on the spot. But before we start naming everyone, are there one or maybe two guys who you think are the cream of the crop, the best unsigned kids who didn't get a fair go at it? Lance, we can start with you. I see you nodding your head. So who are one or two kids who you think really deserved it and unfortunately it just didn't work out?
Well, I have a few kids in mind who haven't even gotten an offer yet. But if you want to know who I think the best unsigned kid whose recruitment is wide open and does have a few offers, but I still feel like would have exploded recruiting-wise from having a senior year, that would be Colt Fulton. 16 touchdowns to 4 interceptions in the Trinity League, playing only one game outside of league play, only one game to prepare for league play, and then one of the not top 3 teams in the Trinity League, Orange Lutheran, they don't even play that game because of a COVID cancellation. So 3 of his 5 games this season come against Servite Modern Day and St. John Bosco. They also gave both Jay Sarah and then a non-league play Mayfair a whooping, and he finished with 16 touchdowns to 4 interceptions playing that schedule. That is absolutely nuts. From as far as the eye test goes, he also looks a lot better this season. I mean, better numbers, but he's just his throws were always clean, but he throws an even nicer ball now. He's throwing it deeper with less effort. His ability to find receivers under a lot of duress in a collapsing pocket. I mean, I could go on about his game. I just like his game a lot. But the fact that he is unsigned and I think would have become a not just a BCS guy, but a Power 5 guy by late in his senior season, and he's still available and can still taking offers now, that, as far as who's the cream of the crop that's available at the quarterback position, he's the first guy who's unsigned that comes to mind.
That's a great take, Lance, and he certainly has been great. And you mentioned that schedule, how tough it is, and not even playing Orange Lutheran, which would have, I don't want to say padded his stats, but he would have played pretty well against them, I'd imagine. So that would have been another chance to impress. So I think that's an awesome take. I agree. I remember watching him in the playoffs last year against Sierra Canyon, against severely undermanned that Santa Margarita team a year ago, much different than this year. They were the last ranked team in Division II, and Fulton, he had a tough time, but you could tell there was something there. He was good. He's a really great player, so I was happy he got his season in, and he impressed this spring. I hope it all works out for him. I'm with you. I think he's a great player.
And may I add, you're right, he balled out in that game. He played that game with a torn labrum, not on his throwing arm, but on the other arm, so that must not have been fun.
Yeah, no way. All right, Bodie, in San Diego, one or two to start the discussion, who you think should have gotten a Division I scholarship offer?
Yeah, there's 4 overall. The first guy I'll hit on is Vance Jefferson. He's a receiver at Poway. Early on in his career, had a couple scholarship offers, and then injuries just hit him. Junior year, I think he was able to play 3 or 4 games before an ACL took him out, and he's really bounced back strong this year. They went undefeated. Poway did 5-0, and in those games, he scored 13 total touchdowns and had an interception. I know he had a really impressive kickoff return for a touchdown. So just a guy that I think can help a team at the next level in so many ways. Maybe he's undersized, but 6'1", 190, I don't think is very small for a receiver. And he's just a guy that every year I feel like you can count on. He's put up the numbers down here in San Diego. He's played on top club teams and impressed. And I'm just really surprised that a school hasn't jumped back after he's shown that he's healthy from that ACL. And it happens sometimes. So maybe he has to go the junior college route. And as a qualifier, he could be there only 1 year and then head on. So I see that as being a scenario for him.
Yeah, what's nice is these kids' stories aren't told yet. They have a chance to go on and get to the next level, even if it's not the, you know, traditional route, as they say. I've talked about Cole Bullock a lot, the Sierra Canyon linebacker, and we'll touch on him in a little bit. But just because I've done a lot with him this spring, I'm going to go with Ed Riley, the St. John Bosco offensive lineman, who, I don't know, every time I watch them play, he is so good. And that's a line that includes Ernest Green, who's one of the best linemen in the 2022 class, Max Gibbs, who's going to USC, and even Greg Biggins, again, the second time I'm referencing him, but he did a nice write-up after the Mater Dei and St. John Bosco game about both teams, and he talked about how he thought Riley, a lot of the time this year, was St. John Bosco's best offensive lineman. So I don't know if it's because he's 5'11 and maybe a little bit undersized that he's still unsigned, or whatever it is, I'm not exactly sure, because he's shown year in and year out, I believe he's a three-year starter, that he can play at the next level. I mean, if he's the best offensive lineman on St. John Bosco, one of the best teams in the country, it begs the question, you know, why isn't he getting recruited? So he's someone who stuck out to me, and we'll go over a few other names, but I've year in and year out, I see him and I think, okay, that's a kid who I think is deserving of some offers, and they've never really happened with him. So hopefully he can figure something out and it'll all work out in the long run, because I think he's a really talented offensive lineman.
You know, Ed Riley's high on my list. I cannot believe he doesn't have D1 offer. I think, like you said, it's the height, 5'11", which is not even crazy undersized, but it's definitely a lot shorter than prototypical for O-linemen. To think that he is on the reigning national champion, and last year, that means he was holding off 3-star kids, 4-star kids, 5-star kids. I don't care what your size is or how it makes you project, when you've already proven it against teams comprised solely of kids who will be playing at the next level. When someone does it at that level of competition in high school, throw the measurables out. That's my opinion. So I think you're spot on with that.
Thank you. Yeah. Again, it's surprising. So we'll see what happens with him. Lance, why don't we go through the rest of your list? Bodie, we'll go through the rest of your list, then we can finish with my list.
Okay, well, Cole Bullock is also around the top of my list. Another guy who might be 1 or 2 inches shorter than you want to see for a linebacker, but there's plenty of great six foot to six foot one linebackers out there. His 100 tackles last year on one of the better defensive teams in the country. He's so physical. He's yoked. He plays on special teams and plays some fullback, even though he's not a speed guy per se. Just has a great feel for the game. Every time I see him, I'm like, how is he there? How is he there? He's everywhere. And then the two other guys who really pop off with no D1 offers to my knowledge, even though they are both 3-star guys, just like Riley. One of them is, I think I have the pronunciation on this right, D'Artagnan Musio. That's it, Musio. The Capo Valley QB. He is now the leader, has the best game in Capo Valley history from a passing standpoint, passing yardage. Only 5 games, 1,754 passing yards, playing the likes of San Clemente and San Juan Hills. 20 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. He's also 6'5". I don't really get what there is not to offer there. And for someone who's only played 5 games with that qualifier, that's the most passing yards in California. The other guy who's super high on my list that I just can't believe doesn't have a D1 offer, Connor, I know you're high on him too, that would be Lando Brown, Gardenas Serra, middle linebacker. He's about 5'11 and a half, but he was a preseason All-State guy for us. 99 tackles. 29 tackles for loss, 19 sacks for 143 yards lost. That was his junior year. That was his junior season statistics. This year, through 6 games, 67 tackles, 20 of them for loss, and 9 sacks already. The one game where he didn't have 11 or more tackles was Notre Dame Sherman Oaks on April 1st. I was at that game, and I can confirm he was one of the best players on the field that night, even without the numbers to show for it. I just can't help but think of all the schools that are going to be kicking themselves a couple years down the road for not having these guys.
Yeah, I agree with Brown and I mean all the guys you mentioned. Bullock, you see him, you follow him on social media. He's benching the NFL Combine 225 pound weight like 25 times. It's like, is this kid a NFL prospect or a kid looking for a D1 offer? It's surprising. Yeah, and I mean, you talk to all these guys' coaches as well, it's the same story. So again, we want to play the long game with these guys and see what happens down the line. I agree with all that, Lance. Bodie, how about you? Who else do you have?
Yeah, the next guy is Sky Dinnell at Mission Hills. He's about 5'7", 5'8", but it's just a three-year varsity guy playing at the highest level in San Diego. And he's produced as a slot guy. He's made several interceptions as a corner. And the biggest thing that stuck out to me, junior season, he returned 5 punts for touchdowns. Like, there's got to be a place for a guy that is doing those type of things. Like, even if it's just a school that wants to bring him in as a walk-on and just say, you're our punt return. Like, clearly he has a knack for doing it, because it's not that he's doing it in 8-man football or returning it against the worst teams. Like, this is in one of San Diego's best leagues and doing it in playoffs. And just because he returned 5, he brought others back and was pushed out of bounds late. But he's a guy that I think just so many people have looked at, oh, the 5'7", I'm not really sure where we can place him. Well, get the ball in his hands and just let him get out there and see what he can do, because he's a guy that's just impressed me every time I've seen them play the last couple of years. The next guy I want to talk about, Stephen Britton. He's a running back at Santa Fe Christian. He was the only running back in San Diego this year to make it to the 1,000-yard mark, which really impressed me. Did it in 87 carries, so averaging 12 yards per carry. In 26 career games there, he's run for over 2,300 yards, 17 touchdowns just this year. His junior season was ended early after an injury and was able to come back and just, even in the limited 6 games, still reach 1,000 yards. And it's just a guy that I have to think there's a place out there for someone that just needs a workhorse that can carry the ball. I know we're seeing more passing offenses, so it's not that style, but if it's someone who runs wing T, triple option, like, this is a guy you can count on and you know is just going to keep running forward. And then the last guy I want to talk about, Jordan Reed. He's a quarterback out at El Centro. And I think the problem that often these kids out in the Valley have is really to drive out there. We're talking 2 hours from most of San Diego. So these teams rarely get a chance to play against what most would consider San Diego, just because they're out in Imperial County. But Jordan's 6'6". I've seen him at some of these camps throwing. Like, he in their 5 games this year, he went over 1,000 yards, threw 16 touchdowns to only 1 interception. I think ultimately it just comes down to the competition level. Like, I think he can play, but others may look at it and see that they didn't allow a point in their first 4 games, and oftentimes he's coming out of the game early. But a 6'6 athletic quarterback, I just have to think there's a spot. It kind of reminds me of Josh Allen when you look back a few years ago. He's up at Fireball, which is just another place where you're kind of off the grid a little bit, and maybe the recruiters didn't get out there because they didn't see a teammate or an opposing player that they needed to see. So maybe it comes down to he needs to get into a JUCO spot. Unlike Josh, he doesn't really need to grow anything at this point. But I think once others can see him playing against guys on the similar skill level as him, he'll really take off. And I think there's a guy that there's a lot to work with.
Yeah, and hey, even Aaron Rodgers did junior college, so
yep,
that works for you if that's what you got to do. Okay, 2 other guys, or maybe I'll list some more. I don't know. I have a list here, but just guys who I think could help a college team. Jules Brinkley clearly could help. We talked about him before, Lance, but just he's one of the best players on that modern day defense, and modern day showed that they have the best defense in California this past week. He was great. He has some big hits. He plays bigger than his, I don't want to say small frame, but he is like a defensive back safety size, but he plays bigger than that. I think he could help a college team. And I don't know if maybe him transferring out of Philadelphia hurt his case in the sense that he had relationships with coaches east, and now he's all the way west, and they didn't get to know him. I don't know what's going on, but he's someone I think could really help. Every time I watched Mission Viejo, I was impressed with Brendan Warty, a safety for them who yes. plays a little bit bigger than his size as well. Just a gamer, and if you talk to Chad Johnson, their coach, he really likes him. So I think he is someone to watch out for. And then up in the Foothill League, Colton Fitzgerald leading Saugus to their first Foothill League win in a really, really long time. And he's a guy who works with Danny Hernandez, the quarterback coach who works at a lot of the top guys down here. And you just see on social media, they're trying to get this kid to a Division I school. He has the Danny stamp of approval, which means a lot in the world of college recruiting. him leading Saugus to a league championship for the first time in a long time is significant. A clear gamer, and there's video of him after leading them to that championship. He's so pumped up. So I think those are three names as well. And I have a few others. Maybe I'll put out a post later. But in terms of guys who I think can help pretty quickly on in a potential college career, those guys jump to mind.
I love it. Every single one of those guys I'm high on. I think Brendan Ward, he might have been on my list if I realized he didn't have any D1 offers.
Yeah, and I'll have to check to make sure some of those guys aren't going like D2 or D3, but I'm pretty sure all those guys I mentioned are still available. So, and who knows, maybe I think May 1st is a decision date for a lot of kids on college, if I remember right. I don't know if that's changed, but so they have a little bit of time. Maybe they'll make some decisions before. But yeah, it's crazy. The football season's over, and then we're going to turn around and have one in the fall. I'm pretty excited to get back to that normal football routine. I don't know about you guys. The spring season was nice, but I'm a guy who likes stuff to be planned out in a very particular way. So this spring season, again, it was nice to cover, but it was just kind of jammed in there. So maybe I didn't get the full chance to appreciate it. But all signs are pointing to a regular fall, so I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what teams are able to kind of use this momentum that they picked up in the season and carry it over with not being much of a layoff or what they're typically used to. And will teams still do the 7-on-7 stuff leading up, or will they kind of give out this time for the kids to take a break? I know I already saw the city section did away with their dead period, so I'll be curious if other sections follow that or how these schools will go, because before we can believe it, we'll already be back at it.
Yeah, this really is a crazy time, but it seems like I said, things are headed in the right direction. This has been the SB Live California Podcast. Lance Smith, Bodhi Da Silva, Connor Morissette, thank you for tuning in. We will see you next time.